I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, I'm Nate Fisher, and this is Timeline Tapes, the podcast made by the YouTube channel Timeline. Our channel has tons of extraordinary documentaries to enjoy, but we know that not everyone has the time to watch a full documentary in one sitting. So we're turning our favorite ones into podcasts that you can enjoy wherever you are. In this week's episode, we hear from British RAF pilots John Peters and John Nicol, who were shot down and captured in Iraqi territory as part of Operation Desert Storm in the Gulf War of 1991. They relive their experience on that fateful day, as well as their subsequent interrogation and torture at the hands of the same Iraqi soldiers they were targeting. The narrator is writer and producer Mark Hallely, and the episode was originally produced for Channel 4's Cutting Edge series as an exclusive interview in which both pilots broke their silence on the events that occurred.
On January the 17th, 1991, in the opening hours of the Gulf War, RAF Tornado pilot John Peters and navigator John Nicol prepared to attack an Iraqi airfield. The plan was to strike in darkness, but operational difficulties delayed their takeoff until dawn. Attacking in broad daylight would give the Iraqi AAA anti-aircraft gunners a much greater chance of shooting them down. It was to be the first and the last low-level daylight bombing mission of the Gulf War.
We dropped off the tanker, and you feel immensely vulnerable because when you're tanking, you know you're within a safe area or as safe as can be assured, and then the moment you're off the tanker, that's when really your operational flying starts because you've got to get down, get onto the deck, and break into enemy territory.
You are detached from the whole thing. You're up there on your pink stallion, you know, charging off to war, and you can't really get a feel of what's going on down below you. So, you know, it's get on with the job and get in towards that target.
I found myself in the front seat as I approached that, find myself more aggressive, more pushing low and being annoyed. Get low, do this, you know. Because when you're obviously the pilot, you're far more involved with sort of aggressive side of the aircraft of actually putting your bum along the ground.
As the Tornado raced towards its target, navigator John Nicol constantly updated the aircraft's attack computer. The approach was perfect, but as they pulled up to drop the bombs, something went wrong.
The final part of the attack is to pull a climb so that the bombs will loft off the bottom and on the target. Everything was going perfectly well We were calling to each other, everything's fine, 3, 2, 1, pull now. And as we came up, I was still looking around, I was looking out to make sure nothing was coming up at us. And suddenly John's saying, I haven't got a package, I haven't got a package. And I thought, what the, you know, what do you mean, what do you mean? And I'm looking down to make sure I've got the correct weapon selected. And then suddenly he's yelling, I haven't got the dot, I haven't got a pull-up, which means something to me now. But by this time, you know, I mean, the time that it's taken me to say it, you've pushed on an extra couple of miles, you're high, you're slow, and we were wallowing in the air, and we still hadn't got those bombs off.
Besides swearing at John all the time, going through every damn expletive in the book, I was also trying to get the aircraft down to low level as aggressively as I could without... I was very aware. I mean, the whole thing, I was just thinking, ground, avoid it, you know, but you've got to get it down because other people are trying to kill you.
The attack failed because the bombs weren't automatically released.
I thought he hadn't pressed a button.
Is that true?
In my own mind, I think, you know, I think that's the case. There's a sequence of switches that you have to go through to get this attack. You know, it's not just go in there, pull up, and that's it. And we'd practice the attack hundreds and hundreds of times with no problems. And there's only two explanations. You know, either the computer didn't work properly or I didn't press the right button at the vinegar stroke.
I mean, John in the back is putting chaff and flare out and, with one and he's, you know, he's got to press the other button. I think he's never, ever... not pressed a button in the entire time we've flown, so I reckon he pushed the button, but he just didn't push it hard enough, you know, in the case of doing everything else.
You know, everything was going perfectly well, and suddenly we'd failed. You know, and it's indescribable to try to tell you how we felt, wallowing around, you know, in amongst AAA, trying to decide whether we had time to reattack. You know, I mean, we thought against every conceivable notion of how you perform an attack. I was thinking, let's reattack. Let's try and make something of this. I'm not going to lose face.
Once we got back down low level, there's still quite a lot of flak going on around us. I was going to turn back on the escape heading. And just as I put on bank, the aircraft just, I mean, it just jumped 30 feet. And started tumbling like a cigarette. You know, I said, what the hell was that? And for me in the front, I don't know how, I mean, I just felt we're pretty low at that stage. The ground, I mean, I was just pushing the stick frantically because the ground was just doing this to me, just coming up and back. And I was just saying, prepare to eject, that's all I could think. When your aircraft just kind of tumbles across the desert floor, and as I say, I mean, when it's suddenly like that and the floor's coming up at you, you know, and I was pushing the stick and the aircraft wasn't reacting, and that, you know, and that's when all your basic instinct of, you know, piloting, you're there going, very apparent, it's not working, you know, prepare to eject. I caught some orange glow in the mirror and I looked back. And I can see, well, he's 5 feet closer to it than I am. I mean, the whole of the back of the aircraft was just... I mean, it's a big tail and a big tailplane and fin. I couldn't see any of that. The wing was on fire, the fuselage was on fire about here. And you know, decisions in life, it wasn't difficult, was it?
So we were, you know, limping on, trying to get further and further away with this thing burning merrily behind us. And, as you know, I just glanced out the wing. Glanced out the side to see if anybody, you know, if there was anything else around. And there's just, you know, a towering inferno coming down the spine of the aircraft towards me. And, you know, you're starting to get into a silly situation.
It
really
is
time to leave the aircraft now.
And he said, OK, right, prepare to eject. I'd already yanked the stick back so we were climbing for height because it makes the ejection safer. And we both counted down 3, 2, 1... ejected yet. And I remember just before just saying, why us? And I thought, why? First damn sortie. A real sense, pulling that handle was your sense of failure. You know, this is it. You're out of that aircraft. You're no longer part of the war.
As he ejected from the aircraft, John Peters suffered slight concussion, cut his eye, and badly injured his knee. but both men were relieved to find themselves alive.
Basically, we are really in deep shit now. You know, I mean, the chances of us, it was broad daylight, the chances of us actually making it back to some kind of friendly lines or hiding for 20 hours or something till the combat search guys...
In a completely flat desert. Yeah,
till the combat search guys could come and get us. We were fairly limited. So, you know, we just got on the ground and looked around. It was strange. Getting down on the ground, then you're looking around and you suddenly think, my God, you know, we're standing in the desert.
He came across, we were about 50 yards, 100 yards apart, and he came across. And he said, well, this is us then. We're in the Iraqi desert.
We put out a few calls on the radio to say that we were down and safe, got our guns ready for what they were going to be worth, and we started running off. After God only knows how long it was, it could have been, you know, 10 minutes or an hour, we thought we saw somebody on the horizon or something, and we dropped down and we were looking over the horizon at what we were presuming was a soldier lying on the horizon looking at us. And gone. It was probably a tree or something, but you know, your mind, your eyes are playing tricks with you and everything there. And after that, we got up and started moving, and you know, a little way on, crawling as we went and trying, you know, trying to keep as low as possible.
And then we finally saw a man.
Welcome back to Timeline Tapes. We've just heard about the extraordinary events of January 17, 1991, when pilots John Nicol and John Peters were shot down after their failed bombing mission. We return to the action after they successfully ejected from the aircraft, only to be met by a mysterious figure on the horizon.
Quite a way away, but it definitely was a man, and that is the time when you think, and for me, certainly, you don't know where you can feel your heart pumping, your veins kind of doing, and you're hitting the deck, and you're thinking, what do we do? And you know, you can feel your eyes kind of widening. You know, you've got your gun there, and you're very apparent that suddenly you've gone from, big package, nice tornado, lots of weapons, lots of power, to here's
rather
little...
small and insignificant. And then over the, if you like, over one of the sand dunes, this shimmering line of men appeared, coming towards us with rifles. And again, I don't think they'd spotted us, but they were certainly following a trail or something. And we looked at them and saw them coming, and we couldn't move at this point, you know, I mean, if we'd moved, they would have seen us. And we were cowering behind a 2-foot, you know, cactus plant or whatever it was, desperately trying to get down as low as we could. And suddenly, a shout went up, and they're just opening up with these AK-47s, and it's the most horrifying thing, worse than being shot down. You know, they're just raking the ground around us with bullets. And I'm looking at John, thinking, right, you know, we've got to make a serious decision here now. And I was all for
turned around at me and said, "Shall we go out with a bang?" Let's stand up and shoot a couple of them, waste them.
Bit of daring do.
Yeah. But it was like flying to the ground. I just said, no, I mean, there's always hope, because why do their job for you? Whatever happens, you know, it wasn't a case if it was two or three where you could have a chance of winning. I mean, there were 12, 15, I don't know, and all with, machine guns and wasting the area around us. And we've got these two little poxy pop guns. And that's just stupid. You're just going to stand up and get your belly split open. So that was the time we decided to...
So we decided to give ourselves up, you know, do the decent thing. And one of them ran up towards us, grabbed us. I think they grabbed one of the personal beacons off us or something like that. And then he just started punching me in the face. You know, and there's nothing you can do about this. There's little point in reacting or anything. And he's just standing there hitting me. And thank God the officer was there with him, because I'm convinced that, you know...
They were generally jockeying us around. They were hitting John and, you know, and starting already to grab bits of it. I, I'd flicked my contact lenses out, so I had my glasses on, and they ripped those off, took my watch, you know, and
they were sent, you know, I mean, as far as I was concerned, they were going to kill us there and then. You know, I thought, you know, well, that's it. That's it over now.
If it wasn't for him, we would, yeah.
Thank God the officer got hold of them, or whatever he was. And he stopped them, you know, and he pulled them all back, and they basically looted everything that we had on us, and then dragged us off to the vehicles.
Took John's gun out, and in a kind of triumphant, you know, we captured them, put it in the air to shoot, and the damn thing jammed. I thought, luckily we didn't follow
Peters
the first
and
idea.
Nickel were taken back to the airfield they tried to bomb and paraded in front of hundreds of cheering Iraqi soldiers. They were then taken north to Baghdad, handcuffed and blindfolded. There they were handed over to Saddam Hussein's secret police. The longer they held out, the less valuable their information would be to the Iraqis.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We went through this sort of labyrinth, and they put me in a room, and I was separate from John there, I think. I can't really remember. And I was there, and I was, by which day they blindfolded us both again, because I think John had managed to get his blindfold off. And then, I don't know, just seeing the world kind of fell in, because they're, I don't know how many, because I never saw, but they're just a whole load of guys.
They were just punching, kicking, hitting, and I just fell on the floor. And difficult to remember, but, you know, they would drag you up and then beat you back down to the floor again. And nobody was asking anything, nobody was saying anything. I think they were just taking, you know, some kind of strange revenge for the bombing.
So it's just boots and fists at this
stage? Yeah, you know, well, you can't feel, you know, you're just being struck from all sides. It could have been boots, fists, clubs, whatever. And they were just beating you to the floor, picking you up and then putting you back down again. And you're just writhing around, trying to protect yourself as best you can. We had our hands cuffed behind our back. And, you know, you're just trying to move your body into position to try to brave the worst of it.
That was unexpected, because at that stage, they just a whole group of them just came around you, and they're just kicking and thumping and hitting you about the head and the back. And you're rolling around, you're trying to avoid being hit, but you can't, because there were too many of them. And I just remember my bloody head rolling around and thinking, shit, what? And you're starting to try and think. That was what I was trying to do, think. As to what I was going to do to find them.
Eventually it stopped and we were left in a corner somewhere, and I could feel somebody else next to me, and I kind of whispered, John, is that you? And he said, yeah. I said, are you okay? And he said, oh, he whispered something, couldn't really hear what it was.
and they left us for however long it was. After some period of time, they moved me back into the room, and I was sitting. I found myself sitting again in front of the same three Iraqis, and the guy in the centre, the older guy, started questioning me. He'd started with the simple, you know, what's your number, what's your rank, what's your name, and then he would say, what did you fly? And you say, I cannot answer that question. And he'll say again, what's your number? And you'd say that, and then he'll say, okay, what weapons did you carry? What base were you from? What squadron are you from? Are you a pilot or a navigator? And you're either saying number, rank, name, date of birth, or you're saying, I cannot answer that question. It's a fairly one-sided conversation.
Did he become angry?
No, he wasn't really angry. He was more reasoned. He was trying to reason with me to get me to get me to come up with the goods, to get me to come up with the information. He would say, look, you know, he would say, what aircraft did you fly? And I'd say, I cannot answer that question. And then he would... he'd say, why can you not answer that question? And I'd say, I cannot answer that question. And it would go on like this. And he'd say, but surely you can answer this. This isn't going to hurt anybody to tell me what you fly. Tell me if you're a pilot or a navigator. It can't do anybody any harm. And of course, you're always thinking in your mind that, you know, should I just say this? Will he leave me alone if I give him this little bit of information? But, you know, because of what we know from our training, you know, that's once you strike up a conversation with him, then that's the end.
He said, a pilot or navigator. And I said, I cannot, and I couldn't get, I cannot answer that question. Because I got to, I cannot, and that's the shock, because you can't see suddenly. I mean, I was, my head, and I was on the floor. And you think, it's, you know, they're starting. You know, they shouldn't be doing that. They shouldn't be starting so early. And then they kind of grab you by the hair and put you back up on, but she drag you up and throw you on the chair again. Name, Peters, rank, flight attendant. Are you pilot or navigator? I cannot. And you're back on the floor again. And then they pick you up, and these just kind of fists at this moment. And then he just kept on asking it. Name, rank. Pilot or navigator, cannot. And then they kind of just let rip for a while with fists. They started hitting my eyes. They kind of go for the weak spots, really. My lip had already split and everything, but my eye, they kept on hitting my eye right across, kind of really thin. You can feel the sort of, the wheels, when I hit his cheek, you can feel the kind of wheel kind of come up on you. But they kept on hitting my damn eye, and it was already closed anyway. And again, kind of pilot navigating, it's just getting, I cannot answer, and they kept on hitting him on him eye. But it was strange. I mean, I just thought, well, it's okay, as long as they keep on hitting that, because it was so sort of swollen by that stage that I just thought, well, my eye's okay, because it just felt like a kind of a balloon full of water. I mean, it was just squelchy and just... I thought, well, carry on hitting that, mate, because you're not going to get to the eye, because it's just, you know, it's just not there anymore.
They moved us down the corridor, and then you were standing, again, completely disorientated, in the dark, and you didn't know where you were in relation to anything. You were just standing, and you could have been in the middle of a field somewhere, or you could have been in a coffin somewhere, not touching anything. And again, you stand and you wait for something to happen. And sure enough, I was standing about 6 inches from a wall, I found out. Somebody would stand behind me and just smash the back of my head so that I headbutted the wall. And you'd stagger back and they'd stand you up again and then leave you. And they'd leave you for a minute, they'd leave you for an hour, you know, you can't tell. And then they'd do it again, and then they'd do it again, and then they'd do it again. You know, it's...
You don't want to be weak either. You're desperately assessing what I found myself, assessing sort of how I was doing, because you've pain after a while, you get used to that, you know, and they start moving it around the body that you start saying, yeah, it's okay, it's hurting there. Well, they just keep on there, that's great, it's okay, you're doing okay. Okay, so you're on, yeah, they're picking you up. And I found myself talking to myself, and and trying to say, no, you haven't got me yet, it's okay. I find myself trying to take myself out of it.
They again dragged me outside some way, and I was standing with my head against a wall and my feet further back from the wall, standing on the arches of my feet, which is a classic what we call stress position. It means your muscles are cramped, you're in an incredibly uncomfortable and unnatural position to be standing, and you desperately want to move to relieve the stress. And of course, every time you move, then there's somebody there standing in the darkness somewhere who will hit, kick, whatever, but you back into the stress position. You know, so again, you're in a no-win situation. If you stay where you are, you're in pain. If you move, you're in pain.
Did you move? What happened?
Well, of course, you move, and because at some point you have to move. It's, you know, that's what the stress position is there for. At some point you have to move. And so they were there, they'd punch, kick, beat you down to the floor, pick you up, put you back against the wall in the stress position and wait for you to move again.
You start to realise that this is not going to stop. You know, it's not like being in a pub brawl or sort of picked up on outside at a pub and just beaten up. I mean, it's controlled. They're using pain and they're using, you know, the wall, the bat and the clubs and stuff like that in a precise way. I mean, they're deliberately inflicting pain in a very stylized way upon you. The focus of that concentration. I mean, your mouth goes dry and you can smell the guys that are hitting you. You can feel your own sweat and you can kind of taste your blood. It's kind of gritty in your teeth. And you're just trying to hang in there as long as you can. You're thinking, well, here, you know, Helen's not going to have me any longer. You know, I'm not. And my children, I mean, my Tony'd just been born, which was lovely, but I think my main focus was on Guy, my little boy, because I just thought, you know, I won't be able to kind of be his father. I didn't like the thought of someone else bringing my son up. I couldn't stand very well because my leg was quite bruised. And then he just kind of pulled his leg up. Oh, I felt like as if he was just stamping down on the knee. And my knee just kind of was going concave, really. I mean, it just, as if he sort of karate chopped right into my knee, stamping down with a heel. And what I was with, rather than, I mean, all the blows you're going, you know, you're grunting and things like that. And I let out a kind of a yelp, I suppose. And that, well, first of all, the pain just kind of rocketed right up the side of my body and in my head and everywhere. And I was on the floor and I let out this yelp and I didn't control the yelp, which is silly. And that was it. Suddenly they yanked me up. And they did it again, and yanked me up, and did it again, yanked it up, and did it again. And it just kept. And look, the guy, all I remember, guy going, "Are you pilot?" And I'm a pilot. And they just carry on for a time. You think, and then they sort of stop for a while, and then they go back to right name, Flight Attendant Peters, or Peters. Rank, flight attendant, number. And then they say, are you pilot or navigator? And that's just, that stage I thought, well, perhaps I can get away with it. And I just stayed silent for a time. But then they just start ripping into me again and hitting my knee and about my head and really. And I said, pilot, pilot. And then he said, you will answer. Name, Peters, rank, flight attendant. Are you pilot or navigator? And I said, pilot. What aircraft do you fly? And I just saw tornado. And that was it, really.
Thanks for listening to Timeline Tapes. That's it for the first part of Tornado Down. Join us again next week as we hear more about the experiences of both pilots and what happened when they were forced in front of the world's cameras on Iraqi television, and the heartfelt messages they sent home. If you want to experience more of the story, you can watch it on our YouTube channel, along with hundreds of other documentaries. If you want to reach out to Timeline Tapes, you can email us at timeline@little.studios.com, and you can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Those are both at @timelinewh. If you enjoyed this show, please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review too. I've been Nate Fisher, and this has been Timeline Tapes. Let's go down in history together.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.